Hello and welcome to Slap the Chicken, a shiny new science podcast. You join us at the beginning of an adventure, and by adventure we mean every kind, from the rollicking kind they write about in adventure novels to the drizzly kind you can experience on a British adventure holiday for a cost. What we will be doing here is taking a word or theme and talking about the most interesting scientific topics that relate to it. Prepare for the unexpected, as there are no limits to how tenuous these links can get. This episode is looking to kick things off with a bang as we ramble about things to do with explosions. To begin, a little bit of joy-filled technical danger. Our first type of explosion is the only one that everyone demands you find fun. Fireworks. Fireworks should only be handled by anyone over the age of 18. They should also only be bought from certain retailers for private use at certain times of year. Fireworks can only be set off on bonfire night before midnight and New Year's Eve, Diwali and Chinese New Year before 1 a.m. Consequences of unlawful firework use include a fine of £90 or a £5,000 fine and 6 months in the clink. Slap the Chicken does not condone unlawful firework use, a warning which is extended to chemistry teachers and residents of Lenton. Thank you. Between the 7th and 10th centuries in China, there was a great deal of chemical experimentation because of the belief within Taoism that there was a substance which, when consumed, would give a person eternal life. As part of this quest, an alchemist is said to have heated saltpeter with sulfur and charcoal, producing an elixir of instant death, black powder, also known as gunpowder. From the 10th century onwards, this powder was incorporated by the Chinese military into their weaponry. They also stuffed it into bamboo sticks and lit it to scare away evil spirits. These exploding bamboo tubes were the basis for the first fireworks. Whilst cheap, naturally sourced and completely biodegradable, advances in production methods and health and safety meant that the world quickly moved on from the bamboo tube. So how does a firework work? Let's imagine cutting a firework in half along the length of a cylinder, not that anyone should ever do such a thing. What would you see? Well, you'd see a main chamber with a bit sectioned off at the bottom. The bit at the bottom is tightly packed with gunpowder with a fuse sticking out at the end. Lighting the fuse naturally ignites the gunpowder, which provides the propulsion for the firework. There must be sufficient gunpowder in the bottom so that the time it takes to combust fully is enough time for the firework to have got a safe distance off the ground. After all the gunpowder has burned up, the contents of the central chamber are ignited. These are pellets of gunpowder fused to small pieces of different types of metal compounds. The varieties in the metal provides the coloration of the fireworks. So why do the metals glow in different colors? It's time for a little physics. When the metal gives out light, it produces photons, which can be thought of as packets which contain an amount of energy. The colour of the visible light emitted depends on the amount of energy in the packet. As we go through the rainbow from red to purple, the energy of the photons increases. So how do you get a metal to produce photons of visible light? A simple thing which gives me joy is imagining a ladder. So I would like you to do the same. Each rung represents an energy level that an electron in the metal can occupy. Electrons normally like to sit at the bottom of the ladder, but if they are given energy by the heat of the firework, they can climb the ladder to a higher energy level. They drop back down to the bottom of the ladder shortly afterwards, since that's where they prefer to be. Quite sensible of them. During the drop-down, a quantity of energy gets released, which is the same size as the difference between the energy value at the bottom and the energy value at the rung the electron got to. This quantity of energy is, you guessed it, the photon. Every metal produces a different range of photons when it is heated. Strontium and lithium produce mainly lower energy photons of red light. Sodium and barium lie in the middle, producing yellow and green respectively. Potassium mostly produces higher energy photons of purple light. Using a mixture of gunpowder pellets with different types of metal compounds puts you well on your way to a very colourful display. Now, one of the last things you want to do with any sort of reaction that produces light and heat is put it on a stick and wave it around in front of your face. So how do sparklers work? A sparkler consists of a stick with a mixture of fuel and metal powder bound to it. The metal powder is usually iron, magnesium or aluminium, which produces the yellowish-white colour of the sparks some of you will be familiar with. There is a binding agent which sticks the fuel and the metal together. Having the entire thing blow up as soon as you light it is not ideal, but the binder solves this issue by slowing the reaction speed. The sparks are relatively small, which means that they cool extremely quickly after they have left the stick. However, they do start at a temperature between 1,000 and 1,600 degrees Celsius, so it's very worth keeping sparklers at arm's length and having a bucket of water on standby. Time to retreat to safety. It's also time to turn back time and stretch the definition of explosion a bit. Our second type of explosion is life-giving, strange and wonderful. The Cambrian explosion. Disclaimer, physics student trying to pronounce biology terms ahead, proceed with caution. One of the five kingdoms of life on Earth are the animals. The next way in which the type of life gets classified is by splitting the kingdom into smaller sections called phyla. A singular one is called a phylum. Examples of phyla include chordata, which is the group of animals with backbones. There's also mollusca, which includes animals like snails, squid, and the limpets you might find at the seaside. The variety of animals which are within this phylum is so wide that the universal defining characteristics of it are difficult to specify, but most mollusks are symmetrical and composed of soft tissue with one big foot. Arthropoda is another phylum which you may be familiar with, whether you like it or not. This includes animals with an exoskeleton and a segmented body like spiders and woodlice. The thing that these phyla have in common is that they all came into existence during a period known as the Cambrian Explosion, due to the sheer size and suddenness that the increase of diversity brought about. This lasted for roughly 20 million years, which is fairly sudden if you're a paleontologist and practically a blink of an eye compared to the time it takes student services to get back to you. Pandemics are very rubbish and they're doing their best, okay? Believe it or not, the Cambrian explosion happened during a period of time known as the Cambrian, which was between 541 and 490 million years ago. Let's get a taste of the good old days with a dip into the Cambrian period selection box. First, we have Archaeocyathids, a class whose name means ancient cup, because it looks like a cup, and being around 541 million years ago means it's pretty ancient. It was a type of sea sponge which made itself a hard calcium casing. Hyolithids, another underwater creature with a cone-shaped shell and a pair of stilt-like appendages which lifted it off the sea floor. These stilts are unique to hyolithids and, for some potentially petty reason, are known as helens. Wuraxia were an animal not dissimilar to a slug, although its exact classification is disputed. It was another marine creature which was adorned with scales and long spines, like some animals which are in the same family as worms. However, it fed on the sea floor and moved along using a single fleshy foot, like a mollusk. Opabinia were something. Five eyes, one long proboscis, a tube-like body with 15 segments, gills, a tail fan, and a carnivorous diet made this arthropod an interesting addition to the fossil record. Unsurprisingly, the first reconstruction of this thing was met by laughter. And finally, Hallucinogenia, a worm with legs sticking out the bottom, and spines of the same length as the legs sticking out the top. It also has a head and a face. This fact should not be taken lightly because it took 48 years to find that out. 15 of those years passed before the paleontologists involved realised they were looking at it upside down. So how do we know about all of these wonderful creatures and Opabinia, which I don't trust on principle? Well, most of them were found in an important site called the Burgess Shale, located in the Yoho National Park in British Columbia. The site was first excavated in 1909, since yielding over 60,000 specimens dating from the Cambrian era. When animals are fossilised, their soft parts are usually not preserved very well, if at all. What makes the Burgess shale special is that the soft parts have been preserved in the fine mud that turned into shale over millions of years. Enough of this word shale! What about the time before the Cambrian period? And the time before that? And the time before anything, including time itself. You see, the real life-giving explosion was around you all along. It's our universe. Disclaimer, Slab of the Chicken accepts no responsibility of beings outside of our universe that may be listening in. We'd very much like to know what's going on, if you're the only ones, and whether you have my favourite bouncy ball I lost when I was 11. The Big Bang Theory was first suggested in the 1920s by Georges Lemaître, who had been gassed in the First World War and ordained as a Catholic priest. It was already confirmed that the universe was expanding, so Lemaître concluded that at the beginning of time, the universe must have been packed into a single point of infinite density. It is a truth universally acknowledged that physicists are not great at naming things. The Big Bang Theory is no exception, gaining its name from a flippant joke made on BBC Radio by the advocator of the rival steady state theory, Sir Fred Hoyle. Steady state theory was the idea that the universe has always been in the same unchanging steady state. Matter is created continuously as the universe expands and passes out of the universe after a given time. The universe still expands in this model and a constant mass density is maintained. However, the Big Bang Theory predicted that high-energy short-wavelength radiation from the early universe would still be present, which steady-state theory did not allow for. Over time, this radiation would have lost energy and increased in wavelength, becoming microwaves. This is indeed the case. Robert Wilson and Arno Penzias received a uniform microwave signal from their telescope in 1964, which they confirmed to be the radiation they were looking for. This was not before they had ruled out all other possibilities, including an anomaly caused by the copious deposits from the resident pigeons. Despite the pigeons' best efforts, the existence of this radiation was verified. These microwaves, which are present in the background throughout the cosmos, are now known as the cosmic microwave background. It has been mapped in detail across the visible universe, most recently by the European Space Agency's Planck Observatory. This radiation has cooled over the 13.7 billion years the universe has been knocking about, and is mostly of uniform temperature, about 4 degrees above absolute zero. Slight fluctuations in this temperature have been detected, which correspond to fluctuations in matter density when the universe was young and hot like Joe Biden was. The universe hasn't stopped expanding. In fact, it's getting faster. As to why this is, there is some debate. The most popular theory is that the universe is expanding faster because of something they have called the something dark energy. The short answer is that nobody knows what it is, but it makes up 68% of the known universe. For contrast, every bit of matter in the universe that we can currently detect from galaxies to baked beans makes up 5% of the known universe. There's science to be done. Now, it's inevitable that all of this expanding is going to lead somewhere. One destination is the heat death of the universe, also known as the Big Freeze or the Big Chill. Now, most of the laws of physics do not specify that time must run forward. Imagine a film of a pair of snooker balls coming into frame, colliding, and then leaving the frame. Now, imagine running the film backwards. If you didn't know that the film was being run backwards, how would the snooker balls tell you that the time had been reversed? They wouldn't. However, there is one law which specifies the direction of time in this universe, and that is the second law of thermodynamics. The universe can be thought of as a closed system, unable to interact with whatever is outside it because there isn't anything. As far as we know, that disclaimer wasn't for nothing. The second law of thermodynamics states that for a closed system, the state of the system will always end up in the state of maximum entropy. Now, entropy is the word we use to describe the tendency for disorder to be present within the system. This led to the idea that the universe will one day reach a state of maximum entropy and we can't do anything to stop it. Others reckon that the universe's accelerating expansion will come to a halt and the whole thing will come crashing in on itself in an event called the Big Crunch. Some people think the universe will boing right back out again after the crash and the Big Bounce. Maybe the universe could expand so fast that dark energy starts tearing atoms apart, rupturing the universe in the Big Rip. What if a vacuum bubble formed from quantum fluctuations caused by the Higgs boson particle being too massive zoomed through the universe and wiped us all out in the Big Slurp? Only time will tell. It may seem a little outlandish to predict something that we will never see proven right, but I for one sincerely hope they come up with more theories. The universe may not have ended yet, but this episode of the podcast certainly has. We turn away from the explosion for now, walking towards the camera and putting our sunglasses on like we're the coolest thing on Earth. But what is the coolest thing on Earth? You see, the big freeze was just a teaser. The answer and many other chilly things will be revealed next episode as we look at the science of the cold. See you next time. Stay safe. Disclaimer. Cooking a chicken by slapping it isn't a thing that should really be happening. If one wants to, they ought to do it in thought, like Schrodinger did with his catty thing.